From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Ducati with Jay Gutierrez. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to Jamie Bluma for joining us in the studio in the 7 o'clock hour. Mark Boericher was just here in the 8 o'clock hour. Coming up at 9:30, we'll talk to Annie Rogers from MLB.com about the Royals. And right now, college basketball with Damon Bethea from, and you know him, former star at Michigan State and has been on the show many times, college basketball analyst. Does it all when it comes to basketball. What's up, Damon? How you doing?
I'm good, Stephen. How you doing, man? How you and Nate the Great doing today?
You know what? I'm doing awesome. Nate, not so much, but he's bouncing back.
I'm better now.
Right.
Talking to you.
Yeah. Tough early part of the show,
that's
but he's
what I'm talking about, fellas.
Yeah, he's going strong now. Okay, so let's get into some hot topics in college basketball.
Okay.
What do you think of so many teams passing up on the chance to play in the NIT because they're more concerned about the transfer portal opening up the day after Selection Sunday? We heard Tom Crean criticizing coaches for not wanting their teams to play in the NIT. We see some really attractive matchups, like what do we got tonight? Kansas State at Iowa. And so there's some high-level games in the NIT, but there's some teams that clearly could be in it that chose not to because of the unique timing of the transfer portal the day after Selection Sunday. What do you think of it?
Well, I think that, one, you know, each its own as far as what the schools and their decisions to be, but, you know, what put them in that transfer portal position? You know, it's from, you know, what happened during the regular season, and I don't think that, you know, those things and invites from the NIT are earned and, you know, and being a player. Sometimes you need those games to continue building your program. The portal is going to be the portal. I see it like that. Like there's a lot of, you know, schools out there that would love to have an opportunity to play in the NIT, and a lot of, you know, schools, you know, hey, like a Cal Poly that would love to be in something like that. Those are like sleeping giants, and you get those opportunities. You don't pass up those type of opportunities.
Yeah, it just depends on, like, if you're a high major or a team that's used to making the NCAA tournament, maybe your team, maybe your fan base are not too excited about it. But if you're a smaller school or a school with a young coach or a young team trying to build success, yeah, the NIT could be a very useful experience.
Useful experience. And even some of the you know, the high majors that are trying to get better going into the next season, and you've got some younger talent that you need to, you know, develop and give that type of, you know, game experience too. What better way to do it in a tournament format that most people, like, at this time, this stage, is trying to get better. You know, so the transfer portal is getting started. You know, a lot of names, I think it's 35, 40 names in there. So it's not really too deep. You know, we're going to get up to, you know, 1,700, 1,800, you know, young men trying to, you know, find a better place to find a basketball home.
You use the phrase building your program, though. I'm curious, like, how many schools are actually going to try to build programs anymore? Because it seems like, you know, we hear a lot of criticism of the players for hitting the portal if they don't get the playing time they want or they get a better offer somewhere else. But doesn't it seem like a lot of coaches are looking to the portal like, hey, man, if we didn't have the year we wanted, let's just clean house and bring in some new guys? How many teams are actually going to stick with the players they have and try to build something in this current landscape?
Well, in this current landscape, I mean, it has a lot to do with the portal and the NIL are, you know, they're kind of going, you know, hand in hand, especially with a lot of the high majors that have the resources to try and to do that and try to get the quick fix. I don't see a lot of the mid majors, low majors, however you do it. I just see it, you know, basketball is basketball, because now in this new landscape, of, you know, a powerhouse can be created overnight. But I don't see a lot of the teams that are, you know, so much off the beaten radar, just going all in to clear house and to get a whole new, you know, a whole new starting five, maybe, you know, top eight, you know, where they could be, you know, right there on the fringe of being very successful. But you know what? It's getting crazier and crazier out there every time, Nate. So you may see that in one or two places. Usually it's done via, you know, more freshmen, more young players that are, you know, historically it's been done when, you know, the younger players are exceptional. They go to the NBA and then a school like a Kentucky, you know, some KU, you know, Duke, they have to replace all those players with, you know, even better recruiting class. But this is being done totally different where, you know, it's free agency. So.
All right, let's get into the NCAA tournament. You can help us with our brackets, since you know a lot more about Michigan State than we do. They're part of an 8-9 matchup between Michigan State and Mississippi State. Mississippi mm-hmm. State looked pretty good in the SEC tournament. Tell us what we need to know about Michigan State. Some people were mad that they got in while others were left out. What about Michigan State and going up against Mississippi State? What do we got to know about the Spartans?
Well, it's going to be a very interesting matchup with Michigan State, and it's the battle of the two MSUs. I did watch Mississippi State in the SEC tournament, and they look very good. They're a very athletic team. Chris Jans has his team playing very well. I think Michigan State has been a little, you know, up and down, but they've been playing a lot better. We haven't been seeing the results normally, the close games, being able to pull through. I mean, you saw that down the stretch. They lost to Ohio State at the buzzer. They lost to Indiana, close game with Purdue in the Big Ten tournament. So it's going to be a toss-up. And how Michigan State handles the athleticism and the ability, the tempo of Mississippi State, it's going to be the indicator of that, you know, the outcome of the basketball game. But the West could be wide open, but there's some teams in that out West that are going to make a big statement in the tournament.
Would they have anything for North Carolina if they face them in the second round?
Yeah, I actually think the winner of the Mississippi State Michigan State game has a chance to beat North Carolina. Because of the style of play and what's been, I mean, North Carolina, they've been, you know, North Carolina hit a lull during the year too a little bit, and just that whole thing with style of play. I also think that St. Mary's and Alabama and obviously Arizona and Baylor will have a lot to say in that bracket too as well.
Tell me how you think Michigan State would match up with North Carolina if we get to see it, because I got Michigan State going in my bracket.
Mm. There you go, Nate. See, Nate, this is why we're boys, man.
Yeah. What an absolute kiss ass, but go ahead.
I didn't argue with him, but hey, you know, whatever.
I think that, you know, Michigan State and North Carolina, like, the style of play is totally different. And I think, you know, we've got a lot of physical bodies to throw at Baycott. And I think that's very key to North Carolina because they like to get the ball in there. Obviously, R.J. Davis is an exceptional basketball player as far as, you know, as being a guard. He was, you know, first team all ACC, you know, and I think that, you know, that we've got a lot of guards that, you know, can match up overall. And I think that, you know, we've got a great chance because of the way we play defense and the type of defense that we play. The typical style of defense that goes against North Carolina's offense, I think, is to Michigan State's advantage. So, and always the toughest games in the NCAA tournament are always that first game, you know, the first game of the weekend, and how you can turn around that scouting report going into the second game of the weekend. Coach Izzo has been very he's been exceptional at that throughout the years.
All right, so you can help us out with a couple of other scouting reports because, again, referring to Nate's bracket, Nate has Kansas beating Purdue in the Sweet 16. And so if you would, because Purdue, let's be honest, Purdue's known for flopping in the NCAA tournament.
Right.
And so you tell me, give me your scouting report on Purdue, and if they do possibly match up against Kansas in the Sweet 16, do you think this is the team that finally is going to get to the Final Four for Matt Painter, or is this another disappointment for Purdue?
Well, I think Purdue has a, you know, they can be beat, and at the same time, they can go all the way. They're one of those this year. You know, historically, yes, they've had some flops. I think Edie, they play a little bit of differently through Edie nowadays. I mean, obviously he's an immovable object. And if they happen to face up with Kansas, Hunter Dickinson has had a lot of problems with Edie in the past. Because you remember, Hunter Dickinson came from Michigan. He's played against Edie a lot of times. He tries to take him out away from the basket. But how they can match up, Edie doesn't particularly have to guard. He doesn't particularly have to guard Hunter Dickinson. They have another big that could guard Hunter Dickinson. And Edie can kind of sit in the lane because K.J. Adams isn't a particularly great outside shooter, so it's not going to bring Edie away from the basket as much. As far as Purdue, they've got some interesting matchups. I think that in the Midwest, that region is so many contrasts and styles because you look at TCU. TCU is the best fast-breaking team in the country. They have, they get up and down. You look at Stanford, who's playing Kansas, they're one of the faster-paced teams, and Creighton is out there, and McNeese State. And so that's going to be the wild, wild Midwest. But I think Purdue's got a chance, but it's all about matchups when it comes to this.
So, boy, I mean, now you make me worried about my pick there. You didn't make me feel very good about it.
Hey, Nate, did I break it down for you enough?
You did break it down, but I didn't like what you had to say. So now I'm reconsidering my Michigan State pick. I don't know. We'll have to reevaluate that.
Do you think he's got the whiteout already?
Yeah.
Correcting his bracket.
Do you think, Stephen pointed out the history of the flops with Purdue. And. Yeah. Do you think that when the tournament rolls around, because, I mean, like, I look back at the early days of the Izzo era, and it was like, you just knew that Michigan State, like, they had the confidence. We go to the Final Four. That's what we do, even if we're not highly seeded. Do you think the flip side works for a team like that? Does the pressure, if they're in a close game in this tournament, do you think that the history, catches up to them or bothers them at all?
Yeah, I think that, let's look at it historically for Purdue and the flops, Nate. Let's look at this. You know, they lost one year to Arkansas Little Rock. They lost another year to St. Peter's. Let's look at another year. They lost to Fairleigh Dickinson. I think that, their style of play, historically, they haven't had all of the things that they need to match up in the NCAA tournament. You know, now they've got the guards. They got Braden Smith. They got Poirier. They've got some things, they've got great outside shooting and they got great inside play. They got, the kid that transferred from Southern Illinois, his name is escaping me right now, but he's played really well for them this year. So this year's team, that's why I said Purdue is a little bit different than they have been in the past to really, get going and get through to where they need to be in that Elite Eight and potentially Final Four type thing. So hopefully, for Coach, Coach Painter, who, I mean, obviously I grew up playing against Painter when he was at Purdue. I know him well, and one of my really good friends is assistant there. So hopefully it could be the year for them to get through. Unfortunately, it'd be at the it'd be at the expense of KU, but they may get through there.
I mean, look, most people don't expect KU to go very far anyway. I can see Kansas losing in the first round. I just went kind of crazy with my bracket, deciding to pick some upsets there. When you take a look at the other number one seeds, like Houston, and everybody obviously thinks that Connecticut are the two, Connecticut's the best team. Do you see them cruising to the Final Four? How tough is it going to be for those two teams as number one seeds, in your opinion?
Well, to start off in the South with Houston, they've got Duke, they got Kentucky, You know, they've got Marquette. And there's a hot NC State team in there who caught fire at the right time. And they've got a great guard, and they've got a great big there. You know, they got two really good players. But Houston and their defense will travel. Obviously, you didn't see that against Iowa State in the finals of the Big 12. But, you know, hey, playing three games in 3 days is kind of tough. But at the end of the day, I think that Houston's defense the defense can get hot, too, in the NCAA tournament. Their defense and their style of play, that could get them at least to that elite eight level, and see if they can get through. Now Marquette, we don't know what's going to happen with them, and I know Kolick is coming back, their point guard, and Kentucky has been hot. Kentucky's getting hotter and hotter as we go, and Duke's kind of been under the radar this year, so that's going to be an interesting thing. And you know, when you switch it over to the East and UConn has been very consistent. You know, they've been very consistent the whole year long, and Danny Hurley's got those young men playing well. But in that bracket, you've got some teams that can match up fairly well with UConn. And, you know, FAU, who won't be scared of them, because obviously, you know, in the Final Four, they saw them. And then you got San Diego State, who was another Final Four team last year. They know how to get there. They got a lot of players back on both those teams. And Auburn, who's become the new became a darling over the weekend with the SEC, and Illinois and Iowa State. I mean, you can't count out, you know, Illinois. They've been playing really good basketball between Terrence Shannon and Coleman Hawkins, and then Damascus, and then Iowa State. Obviously, TJ Osterberg has got those boys playing really, really well. So.
To further highlight Nate's bracket, he has Morehead State defeating Illinois in the first round, so he's not impressed with Shannon one bit with Illinois. But
Kenneth Faried is playing at Morehead State still or something.
Hey, he's thinking outside the box.
You got to get some upsets in here, Damon. You don't win your bracket by just going chalk.
I mean, you mentioned this. You mentioned this East region. I mean, damn, UConn conference champ. Iowa State ran through the Big 12 tournament. Illinois won the Big 10 tournament. Auburn looked terrific. And they're the KenPom's number four team in the nation. And, oh, by the way, San Diego State, the 5 seed, they went to the national championship game last year. So they have experienced players that know how to win. And then BYU was supposed to be the highest 5th seed. And they had to drop down to the 6 seed because they can't play on Sundays. That is an incredible bracket. What team do you have coming out of the East?
Whew, man. Well, I'm not going to go against. I'm not going to go against. It's funny. I got a lot of friends in this region, but I think that Iowa State, because of their style of play, I think Iowa State has a very good chance to get out of the region, because I think more tougher matchups are going to be – UConn's got a little bit more. So they could see a FAU in the second round. They could see Auburn. Auburn's the 4 seed. San Diego State's the 5 seed. So they could end up seeing they could see that matchup in the third round – in the third round. And then you got – in an Elite Eight game, they'll have to face Iowa State. So they've got a much tougher path than what Iowa State does as far as, you know, matching up in the East. So it could favor Iowa State. And I think Iowa State can match up because of the athleticism and the way they play. They can match up, and they can still score the ball against UConn, whose defense has been coming a long way over the last month too. So they can not only can they score, they can defend, and Iowa State can do both as well.
And how much fun would it be if we got Drake and Iowa State in the second round? That would be fun.
Wow, man, they're gonna play that game at it. They're gonna just move that game to Des Moines, huh?
Right, that's right. That would be fantastic. Hey, Damon, as always, thanks for talking basketball with us. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
That's
good
our man.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, Nate needs luck. Damon Bethea, our man, talking college basketball. Back after this on WHB. I sent you an invite to the St. John Family bracket contest, Jake. So fabulous prizes available. How's that sound?
Wonderful. I think I got my butt kicked last time I was
there. Let's see. Julia is a has been very successful in the past. We will move on to baseball now.
I think I only beat Augie last time.
Well, she had a rough bracket. Andy Rogers from MLB.com joins us. Hello, Andy Rogers. How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm good. How are you?
Will you be filling out a bracket?
Yeah, probably. Still got to do that, but I don't know who I will pick or probably just go off vibes, you know?
Right. Is there like a Royals media bracket and the Royals PR staff getting involved? Is there a group that you'll be competing against?
I've done one with my MLB.com colleagues before,
Wow.
So hopefully we'll get that going. That's always a fun one. And then my college friends as well. So maybe I should. We're kind of a small media market, so
right.
I don't know how big our pool would be, but maybe we should get one going. And it's always fun hearing the players do their bracket as well. They're going to get a pool together this year. I've heard rumors at least.
Yeah, they've got that. You know what? It breaks up the monotony of spring training and everything else. So why not? All right, let's talk about the Royals. Cole Reagans, opening day starter. I would say no surprise, but I thought maybe they might go with one of the veterans. But I'm glad that Cole Reagans is getting the nod. What about that decision?
Yeah, I think traditionally we'd probably be seeing those veteran starters that they signed, a committed year. One of those guys, Seth Lugo or Michael Wacha, be the opening day starter. But I think Cole Reagans, obviously from what he did in the second half last year, he deserved it. And the Royals were really up front with him and others about that. So I think it does show that the Royals are focused on performance over a lot of things this year. And when someone earns something like this, they're going to reward it with, whether it's opening day starter, more playing time, things like that. I think this is going to be something that we'll see throughout the year, is that performance will matter, does matter already going into the year.
So, earlier today, we were talking about your story at MLB.com about Gavin Cross, the 2022 first-round pick of the Royals, who really struggled in his, last year, and then we find out why. Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and his experience sounded awful. Tell us a little bit more about what he went through, and hopefully now he's through it. But, I mean, that explains his struggles. But, I mean, they kept that under wraps pretty well. Nobody knew about that. And hopefully now he'll get to live up to his potential.
Yeah, so last year I knew he got sick. Wasn't sure what it was. Don't think they knew what it was right away when I was asking about it. And then they obviously found out that it was a tick-borne illness, and they'd hoped that he maybe could get back, but he was down for the count for quite some time. He said about a month and a half. He didn't swing for 2 months. No running, no throwing. I mean, this hurt him. I had kind of heard about what was going on, and out of courtesy for him, kind of just left it be and let him get back, let him recover. He had a good fall league, tweaked his hamstring a little bit, so he didn't play in a ton of games, but he got a lot of work in the cage, just trying to get, there were two things that he was trying to do. One, get his swing back because he was not doing well in high A to start the year. So he had to get his swing back, but he also had to get his body back in shape. So there were two things kind of going hand in hand, but a lot of good work, and then he took that into the offseason. Came back to spring training and said he would sit down with me for the story. And he was, to his credit, he was open and honest about the struggles, the challenges. It's a really unique journey, obviously. And he looks better, says he feels better, he looks more confident in the box, has got that strength back. He lost probably about 20, 25 pounds during that whole thing last year. And so he's gotten that back. He looks, healthy. So that'll be kind of what his goal is this year, is just to be on the field. And I think it's a really, he talked very openly about how much of a learning experience it was, gave him a lot of perspective for everyone involved. both team side and Gavin's side and his family. So glad he's doing well. You know, he was really happy to get into Cactus League action over the weekend and then the spring breakout game as well. But definitely a unique situation. I've never heard of that before. Still kind of, it's just like you kind of shake your head at it. But, you know, I think it obviously is the reason why he struggled so much, couldn't play at the end of last year, and hopefully this year he puts together a better season.
Yeah, I mean, it's terrible to hear about it, but in a weird way, it's got to be a relief to know what actually was going on and that there was something. What's the plan for him in terms of, like, where he goes and maybe, how do they try to get him back on track in terms of just what the trajectory of his progression will be now?
Yeah, I think, you know, wouldn't be surprised if he was, you know, in double A to start the year, maybe just, like, play a full year there, kind of just get his feet under him. He'll play all over the, you know, all over the outfield, all three spots, and just get his bat going is really the big thing. You know, he was really open with me for the story, you know, and I wrote it, and he really has days that he feels off, like he it's just something is weird, and he can't really explain it. So managing those days and being, you know, honest with you know, himself and the trainers and things like that to make sure he's okay, and then you know, getting his swing back in the right place. He finally said a couple days ago that he feels, you know, he's feeling like it's in the right direction. So that's, you know, that's good to hear. With the minor league season, you know, coming up, starts I think mid-April, a little bit before that. So just getting him ready to go and play, you know, almost every day is what the goal is.
Andy Rogers from MLB.com is our guest. We had Jamie Bloom, a former Royals reliever, in studio earlier, and he said that he's really interested to see the makeup of this bullpen once it's settled. So what are we looking at here? How many spots are still open in the bullpen, and what can you tell us about the battle to put this thing together?
Yeah, I think there's a couple spots open still, and some tough decisions are coming this week. You know, I think what's going to be really interesting, at least today, is to find out what the status is of Jake Brent. He exited Sunday's game. I think that was the day with a hamstring injury. So finding out the severity of that and how, you know, what that diagnosis is will either give clarity for the bullpen or he'll continue to compete for that spot. So. He's definitely competing for a spot, and then there's a couple other guys who are still, you know, there's probably one or two spots that are open, and the Royals will be want to have a long inning reliever as well. So it'll be interesting to kind of see that makeup and how they attack those first couple weeks of the season.
Have they settled on is Lyles the fifth starter as long as he's healthy?
No, that competition is ongoing. It's very clear that that is still an open competition. All of my reporting has indicated that they have not settled on that. So I think, you know, Lyles is obviously the incumbent guy. He's the guy that they're paying. But like I said earlier, performance is going to dictate, you know, playing time. So he's part of that competition. Alex Marsh is part of that competition. And Daniel Lynch is also part of that competition. So it'll be an interesting last week here and surprised to kind of see how that all plays out.
So if Lyles doesn't make the rotation, is he a bullpen guy? Like, what happens?
Yeah, I think he'd go to the bullpen. He's done that before. He's been a long-inning reliever. The Royals wouldn't be opposed to that as well. So, yeah, I think that could absolutely happen. You know, the other thing, too, is they might not even announce a fifth starter by opening day just because of the off day. They could theoretically pitch, you know, if they need a long inning guy, they could pitch that fifth starter in that opening day game or something like that because they've got the off day to kind of work around. So they might not announce it before opening day. So we might see a couple of those guys make the opening day roster, then, you know, they figure it out from there. But we'll see. It'll definitely be something I'm asking about pretty much every day down here for this last week.
I'm afraid to even jinx it, but looking ahead at the forecast for opening day, high of 62 and sunny. So we can cross our fingers that will be the actual forecast because we're actually, we're 10 days away. Does it seem like it? I mean, you've been out there, so it's been a grind. I bet it seems like it to you, but it's sneaking up on us.
Yeah, it always kind of does. Like, you know, mid-March, it always feels like we've been down here very long, and it's opening day is so far away. And then you get to the last week of spring training, and you're like, what the heck? It's already here. So very excited to go back home, get the season started, and kind of say goodbye to Arizona for the year. It definitely feels it's a weird feeling being down here for so long, but it's also like, wow, I can't believe opening day is literally next week, I guess.
I know. I'll be here before you know it. Hey, Annie, thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Annie Rogers, MLB.com. Oh, did you see the new Netflix series has been announced? Instead of quarterback, it's receiver.
Ooh.
Would you like to know who's featured?
Please. Okay. Please. Pretty please.
Tell me if this excites you or do you give an eh.
Should we guess?
Yeah.
How many are there?
Five.
Tyreek Hill.
No.
I mean, that would be interesting.
That would be exciting.
That would be interesting. Justin Jefferson.
Yes.
That was one of my guesses.
Well, the guess. Don't just let him dominate.
C.D. Lamb.
No, but you could C.D.'s nuts.
Yeah! Got him!
Boom, boom,
got
boom,
him!
Boom. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Got him! Got him!
Welcome back to the show.
Any more guesses, Jake?
Better not.
He said C.D. Lamb. Guess.
Cooper Kupp.
No. Two guys off the same team, which is stupid.
Well, because I feel like, you know, with the quarterback, they did guys that were in different. They didn't take all the biggest star quarterbacks. It was
right.
Mahomes.
All these guys are stars.
Oh, these guys are all stars. Okay.
And two of them are on the same team. It's stupid.
Devontae Adams.
That's number two.
Ja'Marr Chase.
No. The next three guys all in the playoffs last year.
Debo Samuel.
Yeah, and Ayuk.
Debo Samuel is one of them. Not Ayuk.
Kittle?
George Kittle.
Oh, that counts as a receiver.
Yeah, I guess. The ball.
But not in the Super Bowl, doesn't it?
Hey! Hey! Hey!
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. One more. NFC playoffs. We can break when you guess right. I'd be interested in this.
St. Brown.
Yeah. Amon-Ra St. Brown, yeah. So Devontae Adams, Justin Jefferson, George Kittle, Debo Samuel, Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Like it.
Just take, I'll do 149er. Right. Take Kittle out of there.
Kittle's not a receiver.
You know?
I'm with you. He shouldn't be.
I go with your idea. Tyreek Hill. All hell will break loose in that.
Good. They would not
God,
allow that
would be great.
Oh, boy.
Content.
House right. is burning.
Content. Gun. Content.
Cigars being thrown.
Yeah. Well, yeah, a lot of stuff going on. Who else would you say? I don't know if you want to get crazy. Kadarius Toney, throw him in there.
No,
I'd like to see what's going on there.
I'm good.
I'd like to. I'd like to see what's happening behind the scenes. Wouldn't you? Well, whatever.
What's the name from Buffalo would have been good with all the.
No, Stephon Diggs. Yeah, sure.
All that this year.
I'd have watched that. Yep. Good call. We will take a break back after this on WHB. All right. Thank you to all of our guests: Jamie Bloom and Mark Boerichter, Damon Bethea, and Annie Rogers. Good show. We'll be back tomorrow. Try to do better. Probably won't, but the effort will be there right here on Sports Radio 810 WHP.